welcome to this week's edition of Thursday in the Doghouse. I'm your host, Rini Premeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer. We're here each and every Thursday morning from 10 to 10:30 talking about all topics relating to our pet dogs. On recent programs, we discussed safety issues with dogs and toddlers. We talked about body language we should be paying attention to at the dog park. And last week, I interviewed a local homeopathic veterinarian who firmly believes we are over-vaccinating our dogs. We're going to lighten things up today and talk to a New Jersey dog trainer, Velissa Wellworth, who owns her own business, The Clever Canine. Velissa trains and works with her own dogs as canine actors and models in TV and advertising media. She also does pet obedience training privately in your own home, and she is very active with her own dog, Gala, in doing agility training. And that's what our topic is going to be about today. Before we talk to Velissa, please give me just a moment to let you know what my services are in the South Jersey area as a professional dog trainer. Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Rini Premeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Velissa is here with me in the studio today. Welcome back to the Doghouse, Velissa.
Thank you very much.
Tell everybody what you do. Give them an idea of what services that you offer here in the South Jersey area.
Well, with the Clever Canine, I specialize in in-home private training. So it's training at the owner's home with their dog. And I offer basic obedience training, puppy training, behavior modification, as well as agility foundation training.
So tell me a little bit about how you go about training for agility. Do you do that privately or do you train in a facility?
It can be done either way. It's a lot of fun to attend classes. There's a lot of exercises and games that can and should be trained before actually getting the dog on equipment, and that's what I like to start owners on in their own home, particularly when they've worked with me already in establishing basic obedience work. Then they want to go further. They're having so much fun, they want to do more with their dogs. And there are a lot of games and exercises that can be done at home with relatively little space and with relatively little equipment that will get you on the right road to some solid agility training so that then if you decide you want to become more serious with it, and it's an addictive sport, I'm warning you, a great many people who start the training end up wanting to compete. And with that foundation, that helps to get you and your dog ready to be able to handle that kind of level of playing of the game.
Okay, so for those people who have no clue as to what agility is, can you tell them a little bit what this sport is about?
Sure. Agility is the obstacle course for dogs. You've probably seen it on TV. You see the dog running with one person through tunnels and over jumps and running over the A-frame and weaving in and out of the weave poles. There's the teeter-totter, and there's the tire jump that they jump over. So it requires a lot of athleticism and control on the part of a dog, particularly.
Okay. And what age would you start a dog working with agility?
That's an excellent question. Actually, for those of us that are really hooked onto the sport, when we bring a puppy home at 8 weeks, the basic foundation training starts the day the puppy comes home. We certainly do not put them over a jump or expect them to be running over an A-frame or anything like that. It's not safe.
Right.
But there's so much training that happens when the puppy is developing, and that's the ideal time to do it. You don't have to start a puppy at 8 weeks. People come in with their dogs that are 4 or 5 years old that want to have to participate, and they can start training then.
Mm-hmm.
But for example, jumping, you absolutely do not want to jump your dog until generally 18 months is when we start jump training. Before that, their growth plates haven't closed and it's not safe.
Right, that's what I was going to ask you. Should a dog be cleared by its vet before doing any of this type of sport?
That's always a very excellent process to go through to make sure. And dogs mature at different rates, of course, depending on the breed. The weave poles are another issue. You don't want your dog weaving in and out of poles. Generally, a year is the accepted time, although folks have differing opinions on that. But there again, it's putting a lot of torque on the dog's spine, and you want to be sure that your dog is fully matured before you're asking them to do that.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are so many things that can and should be done before the dog is being required to jump or weave that will enable them, when you are ready to start that kind of training, that they will have that foundation.
So what is that training that you're talking about? Does it require a lot of basic obedience training? What else? What else would you include in that preparation?
Basic obedience is really, really important because you're going to be working ultimately with your dog off leash. So all of the stays and the sits and the downs and the recalls are really important. Even just loose leash walking for the dogs, focusing on you while you're walking is really important. And then that will help to develop the rapport that you're going to be furthering in the development with agility.
Mm-hmm.
But you need that basis to start with. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're going to find yourself a little frustrated and
right.
The dog's
so I would imagine your dog really needs to focus on you. He needs to be paying attention to you and following your cues very carefully.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so a lot of attention work. You mentioned to me before the show got started that you do some tug-of-war training. And what is that about?
Oh, yes. Tug-of-war is most folks have some idea of what it is. Basically, there's a long toy like a rope where the dog has one end and you have the other end.
Mm-hmm.
And you're tugging against each other. And a lot of folks that I work with in my pet obedience, when they hear that I am an advocate in certain cases, not all, for tug-of-war, many of them say, oh, I was told I should never, ever tug with my
right,
dog.
Right.
And granted, there are many such circumstances where absolutely I would say do not tug with this dog.
Mm-hmm.
Children should not be tugging with a dog.
Correct.
And so if you're in a home where you have children and you want to do some of this training, I wouldn't tug in the presence of your children because they're going to turn around and want to do
absolutely.
It as well.
Tug
absolutely must be played by the rules. And rules are teaching the dog an on and off button. So the dog is learning self-control, actually. So tug of war isn't just this wild game where the dog is getting aroused.
Right.
But when it's properly used, it is a great way to exercise your dog in a very, very small space.
Mm-hmm.
It builds drive, which we need in agility. You need the dog to have a level of energy built up to want to do those obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
It helps to develop the relationship with you because the dog is interacting with you in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
And also learning self-control because the dog learns to drop that item immediately. And that's where the rules come in.
Mm-hmm.
And we teach it very positively with treats. The dog is rewarded for dropping. It's a great way to teach sit stays.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great way to teach what we need is called a release cue, which, for example, at the beginning of the course, you put your dog in a sit, and you may have to walk out 20 feet. You need that dog to stay there, but you also need that dog to release like a rocket when you ask them to. And so we use tug in that way as well.
Interesting. Very interesting. How do you get a dog physically fit to do this sport? Isn't that a requirement? You can't get a dog that's a couch potato or a dog that has not been getting a lot of exercise to start right away on the jumps and the weave poles and things like that, correct?
Exactly. If your dog is a little overweight, you're going to want to talk to your vet first before starting any training, of course. And the first thing you probably want to do is start pounding the pavement a little bit, get out there and do some walks. We do cross-training with dogs that are in agility. It is a demanding sport for the dog, particularly when you start doing it more and more and if you're going to start competing. So doing some hill training, stair climbing is excellent.
Oh, great.
If you have access to a swimming pool, there are plenty of agility folks who seek out places where their dogs can swim.
Right.
And there are also some, in the last few years, exercises that have been developed using a theraball, that the dog balances on front and back legs individually, not all four legs, but that are fantastic for building core strength, shoulder strength, and the exercises approach all muscle groups. For
what
dog.
Is a TheraBall? I've never heard of that.
A TheraBall is a large inflated ball that some of them are peanut shaped, some of them are just round, mm-hmm. kind of like a Pilates ball, but for dogs oftentimes mm-hmm. a little bigger. And there's a woman who has developed a series of exercises. There's a video out. It's called Get on the Ball.
That's cool.
For dogs specifically. Mm-hmm. And that's just one aspect of some of the training that can happen. It's not absolutely necessary, but as the sport grows, there are more and more folks that are coming up with interesting and fun ways of conditioning the dog. There are a lot of basic tricks, actually, that are great for conditioning. Teaching your dog to sit up is fabulous for core strength. Mm-hmm. When you've got that down, if you can get your dog to sit up and then stand up on the hind legs from that position, that's hard for a lot of dogs.
Mm-hmm.
But they need that hind end strength for launching over a jump. So that kind of exercise is good, teaching them to roll over. Even just going from a sit to a down to a sit to a down to a stand.
Happy push-up.
Exactly, mixing that up
right.
With treats repetitively is quite a lot of exercise for the dog, mm-hmm. developing, again, shoulder strength, hind end strength, core strength, that kind of thing.
Have you ever worked with anybody that really was not comfortable using treats for rewards in agility or any of your other training?
Yes, occasionally. And I understand where they're coming from in the sense that they want the dog to be doing something for them and not for the treats. My response to that is that your dog is going to do whatever's most reinforcing anyway, whether it's playing with you, whether it's sniffing in the grass, whether it's eating the treat. And we use food. We call them treats, but they're actually rewards. The dog is earning every bit of it.
It's a paycheck. I always tell everybody it's a paycheck.
Exactly. It's not free. The dog is really putting out for it.
Right.
And so this way, you're getting the behaviors that you want. The dog is enjoying it. And also with agility, we get what's called transfer of value, which the treat has a value. It's a stake. Okay. If the dog is always rewarded for going over that jump by a piece of steak, over time, just the jump itself starts to take on a level of
a different
of,
meaning.
A different
right.
meaning, I'm absolutely.
Not, right. mm-hmm.
Which is how we then get to the point where we can run through a 16, 17 obstacle course without rewarding after every single jump.
Right. That's great. But you don't stop rewarding at forever, do you?
No.
Right.
No.
You get rewarded at the end of all of those jumps or at the end of a series of obstacles still?
Absolutely.
No.
Absolutely. You want to keep the dog's drive for the game. And a lot of dogs, just doing the tunnel is reward enough. But plenty of dogs, that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
And, for example, when I'm competing at the end of the run, I can't have the food in the ring. But when I'm done, I've got my little baggie at the side of the ring with, oh, gosh, there are times my dogs have worked for swordfish.
Really? Wow.
You know, whatever it takes to
right.
get that dog,
sure.
you know, revved up to know that, okay, if I do all these obstacles the best that I can, then mom's going to have something in it for me at the end. And
that's great. That's good. So tell me also, have you ever worked with a dog that didn't enjoy it?
There are occasionally dogs that... for whatever reason, physically, it's just not, they're not cut out for it.
Mm-hmm.
For example, a lot of Basset Hounds, it's going to be challenging for them. Now, having said that, I also knew a Basset Hound many years ago that drew attention to himself every time he was on the course because he was the fastest Basset
Isn't
you've ever seen.
Right.
But I have a dog in my house, actually, my very first agility dog. Was very talented physically. And loved the game, but he had performance anxiety, essentially. He was very easily stressed in public surroundings.
He did well at home, but then he knew when he was in public that
Absolutely.
He felt different.
Absolutely.
How did you recognize that?
Some very uncomfortable situations where he was whining a lot. He couldn't relax in a public setting, which meant that he was exhausted by the end of the day because he, even when he wasn't working, he was high as a kite. And also in the ring, what often happens, and you'll see this if you watch competitions, is that he would be in the middle of a course and it would get to be too much for him and he'd just take off.
He would just leave.
And oftentimes in competition, you'll see, particularly in some of the novice classes where the dogs are new and they're still learning the job and getting comfortable with it, you'll see them, what we call getting the zoomies, where they just start running in circles. And to an unpracticed eye, sometimes people think it looks really funny. It looks mm-hmm. like the dog is having a good
or
time.
Or stubbornness or willfulness at not completing
exactly.
the obstacle.
Dogs right. will either stress up or stress down. And a dog that stresses up is going to be zooming around the ring
right.
and can't concentrate. And right. it's actually when you know what's going on, it's a little sad because you know that dog has just reached overload.
Right.
But there are also dogs that stress down to where they suddenly slow down. They're unresponsive. They start sniffing. And
mm-hmm. we have displacement behaviors.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Interesting. I know a trainer. She's a behavior consultant, and she does service dog training because she's handicapped herself. She's in a wheelchair, and she has to have service dogs helping her. But she also does a lot of activities with her dogs, too, which makes her very interesting. So she told us, and she showed us a video of one of her dogs who stresses out before agility performances. But once he gets into doing the activity, he relaxes and he's fine. It's kind of like, I guess, pre-test stress when you're ready to take an exam and you get really nervous, but once you get started, you can relax. So she kept that dog in that activity, and she tried to work through the stress that he feels before, but she didn't take him out of the game because she felt that he really does enjoy it once he gets into it. So I'm not quite sure what you can do for a dog like that, whether there's something that should be done or just accept it that way. I'm really not sure. I'm not that comfortable with the dog feeling so stressed in the beginning either.
Exactly. It depends very, very much on the dog. And there are plenty of dogs that when they start out are not confident.
Right.
My young dog, Gayla, who's in training right now, who has also a lot of potential, and I know she is going to do very, very well. But emotionally, she's easy to, it's easy to break her confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Unintentionally, of course. But, that's what we're working through with her is building her confidence. She's working in situations where I'm setting her up for success, rewarding a lot, working in different environments, making sure that she's not pushed beyond her limits, and then gradually those limits are stretching out further and further to where mm-hmm. she's more and more confident. So, just because a dog starts out, not necessarily looking like the perfect agility dog doesn't mean that that we should sideline them.
Right.
But there are definitely protocols that we would go through to help build their confidence. And yes, there are, just like my Angelo, dear Angelo, there are dogs that just ultimately it's pretty clear and that they shouldn't be. He's happier doing it in the backyard. And
right.
honestly, for him, the situation is that I feel when he was very young, he was not socialized properly. He was adopted at a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And so the problems that are surface in agility are just basic life challenges for him anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the agility was positive for him to a point.
Sure.
Classes were great.
Right.
Backyard was great, but mm-hmm. he would prefer not to compete, and that's okay.
Yeah, it's interesting because I have, one of my assistants takes her Bichon for agility training, and he's doing very well. So she invested quite a bit of money to put agility equipment in her backyard, and her dog refuses to use that equipment. He does great in class, but he just has no interest in you. She's ready to kill him, you know. But dogs are dogs, and they're just like us. They have their likes. They have their dislikes. They have certain areas that they like to perform and certain areas that they don't like to perform. But, guys, I think that he associates his backyard with going out there and playing with his ball, and he doesn't want to work.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
That's interesting. So what do you think as far as should we look at certain breeds that would be more appropriate for this sport or better at this sport than others? Or should we look at dogs openly and figure, let's try it?
There are representatives of virtually every breed on the planet that are participating in the sport.
Mm-hmm.
As long as the dog is healthy and sound and relatively active,
mm-hmm.
That
would leave my dog out. A little cash potato.
But let's also keep in mind that with the right reward, we can also encourage more activity. Having said that, so for example, if you've got a sheepdog at home,
mm-hmm.
you know, go for it.
Right. Working dogs, I would imagine, would be excellent at this.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Even the toy breeds.
I heard Papillons are excellent.
Oh, they're fabulous, yes.
That shocked me. I didn't realize that. I did do agility for a little while, and I don't recall ever seeing a Papillon in class. So
really?
When I heard that, I was very surprised and very happy to be able to offer information like that to Papillon owners.
Yep, absolutely. If you go to competitions, you see them more and more. The sport is dominated by the Border Collies and the Shelties. However, in competitions, particularly on the venues that permit mixed breeds, and I'm happy to report that within the next month or two, AKC is now permitting mixed breeds to compete.
Isn't that nice?
I think
finally.
It's fabulous.
Yeah, finally. We get out of being snobbish and snotty about these things.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. So if you're interested in agility, you don't need to go out and get yourself a Border Collie. In fact, I would recommend against it. It's because for a first agility dog, you could be getting a little more than you bargained for.
Right.
And it's important that you have a dog that you want to live with.
Mm. You're talking about a dog that starts out with you versus a high-drive dog that won't settle down, things like that.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, we see them every day. I don't know how that happens, but they're almost unmanageable. What do you think as far as doing formal agility versus just having fun? Can you go to a class and just have fun? Or does everybody who goes to a class always into it for the competitive nature and going through trialing?
I think the vast majority of us started out going to a class for the fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's perfectly fine if that's the way you want to participate.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing you want to be sure of is that your dog is in shape. The weekend warriors can be kind of wearing and tearing on their dogs,
mm-hmm.
Needlessly. So as long as your dog is kept in shape during the week, getting your dog out on walks and runs and whatnot, absolutely you can go to class and have a good time and not pursue it further.
Mm-hmm.
For an awful lot of us, though, we start that way, and it is so much fun that we get addicted very quickly, and we want to do more and more, and so the competition is where we end up.
Right.
The neat thing about this part of the country out here, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, New York, is that it's a real hotbed for some of the really, really well-known, excellent trainers are right here. So if you go to a trial here in New Jersey, and one of the new locations is down at the Dream Park, the new horse park,
really?
Down south of the Commodore Barry Bridge.
Right.
And which, with the opening of that indoor facility, we now can have agility almost
Wonderful.
Year-round.
Good.
There are trials virtually every weekend
mm-hmm.
somewhere
mm-hmm.
within probably an hour to an hour and a half radius of
mm-hmm.
South Jersey.
Beautiful.
And because there are so many really great trainers around, you'll see folks competing that are the weekend warriors that are out there. They've been going to class occasionally. They just want to have fun. You'll see them competing alongside of some of the best trainers in the country, actually, with some phenomenal dogs. So it's exciting to just go and watch, and it's free.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Good. Great. What would you say would be the most challenging equipment on an agility course that you need to work with the dogs? I for one think that the teeter totter is the most challenging, but I'm sure you feel that there are maybe others. The teeter totter is a scary thing.
It can be, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's one of the areas where foundation training is important, because there are other obstacles that we use. We call them wobble boards or a buja board, which is a moving board that teaches the dog to be comfortable with motion underneath them. We absolutely don't just put them on the teeter and expect them to move that. So, yes, you're right that can be very challenging.
Mm-hmm. Especially if a trainer, I'm sure you would never do this, but if a trainer was not as skilled as they should be and they put a dog on a teeter-totter and they're not watching that the dog is secure on the teeter-totter, or they don't do it slow enough and then they ask the dog to go on that and have it crashing down too soon, we could destroy that dog's desire to ever go on it again.
Absolutely.
My own dog, my Border Collie, he fell off of it.
Oh.
So when we were training years ago, and it took a long time before he was willing to get back on it again. And I think that, you know, there are other, my assistant herself with the Bichon, I think that she had problems with her dog on the teeter-totter also. So.
Easy to find yourself in that position.
Yeah.
My Golden Gala, actually. And it's actually, believe it or not, something that is for whatever reason, not uncommon with golden retrievers.
Really? Maybe they have a different sense of balance. Maybe their sense of balance isn't...
Perhaps. Nobody really knows, but it's a very often a situation. So with her, as a young pup, I had her on these wobble boards, things that were moving under her, and the key is to teach the dog to do it of their own volition, that we never, ever put a dog on a piece of equipment.
Right.
And force them. Absolutely.
Right.
And the training, actually, the best training is very hands-off. I won't go into the whole details of how it's done, but essentially the dog builds confidence because he or she is actively participating and offering the behaviors himself.
Okay.
So that we're never creating a situation where the dog didn't actually just do it himself.
Mm-hmm. I like voluntary behaviors anyway. I like to reward good behaviors of all sorts. I think that we get stronger behaviors that way too. Don't you? Don't you agree?
I completely agree.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And when a dog is offering something and finding,
because they want to.
Exactly. Exactly. And then they're also learning to think
mm-hmm.
that way instead of being lured around or manipulated.
Right.
Going back to your question about the obstacles, another one that is tricky to train is are the weave poles.
Correct.
And happily, in the last couple of years, there's been a new method that's come out training the weave poles that has cut the time down from, it very often could have taken 10 months to train a set of 12 weave poles. And there's a woman in Canada who, Susan Garrett is her name, and she's very titled in terms of the number of agility championships that she's won with numerous dogs.
Mm-hmm.
She's developed a system of training the weave poles that's taken from maybe 12 months of training down to 12 days.
No kidding.
It's phenomenal. And again, it's the dogs are offering behaviors.
Right.
And so the dog is learning to think about what the job is right from the beginning. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, good. Wonderful. And so with the cost of this, you know, I know that you said that you have agility equipment in your backyard. You're a professional trainer, and you need to have it back there. But can you offer our listeners any kind of ideas on how they might just have a little fun with this in their own backyard without spending a fortune? Are there any types or any places that you could recommend for them to look for equipment that may not break the bank?
Absolutely. Actually, if you go on eBay and look up agility equipment, there are folks that are making PVC.
Oh, cool. eBay, that's a good idea.
Yeah. You can make it yourself. If you take a look at what it's built of, there are, plans that are available also.
Mm-hmm.
There's websites like agilityforless.com that are selling equipment that is not as heavy duty as what you want and have to have in competition, but is more portable. So PVC is the agility buff's best friend. And if you're handy at all and can build some easy equipment. Also, just in terms of building a jump, two buckets and a broomstick, and you've got a jump to be working
on. I had a client recently go out to Home Depot, and you know the painted, colored crates that they have there? She had tons of leftover broomsticks around her house, and so we made three levels of jumps with the crates, and we put the broomsticks, and her little beagle had a blast right in her living room, and so now she's getting into it, and she really likes it, and her dog is really loving it, so I'm thinking that she's probably going to go further with this, so I'll have her contact you, which is what I want you to do, is I want you to tell everybody how they can contact you. Let's go again and just review what your services are, and maybe you can give us some ideas as to how where you would be taking them or how you would be getting them started on agility.
Okay, great. Again, I own and train through The Clever Canine. You can find it online at thecleverkanine.com. You do need the article the, so it's
okay.
thecleverkanine.com, and it's all letters, no abbreviations.
Okay.
You can also reach me at info@thecleverkanine.com. That's the email. And phone number is 856-885-3439. I offer in-home training only at this point,
mm-hmm.
both pet obedience and behavior modification. Pet obedience of all ages, whether you've just adopted an older dog or you have a puppy or you have an older dog that has sort of forgotten a few things. And I also offer agility foundation training.
Right in your home?
Starting in your own home, absolutely.
In their home. And
yes.
Do they eventually come to your home?
Eventually they're going to need to, because I have all the equipment in
my
backyard.
Everything.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us started off living in a space where we didn't have a big yard with all the equipment, and
right.
so we ended up with portable equipment that we could take to the local park
right.
and practice.
Okay, that's great. So now I know who to refer for agility, especially private training. I like that idea. And I'm so happy that you came back to the doghouse with us today, and I hope we'll do this again, and we'll talk about some other facet of the training that you do. So thank you very much for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. I also want to let people know that you need to tune in next week on Thursday between 10 and 10:30, and I'll be interviewing a woman by the name of Susan Dillon. She is a nutritionist, and she's going to talk to us about what foods we need to be looking for in order to provide our dogs with a very healthy diet. So please listen in again next week, and it's really beautiful today, so get out and walk your dog. See you next week, everybody.